and welcome to this collection of calls put together specifically to embarrass the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Now, you'll hear us tackle the very pillars of science, you know, physics, chemistry, fluid dynamics, and, of course, cream rinse. Now, in selecting these calls for you, I discovered something about our scientific abilities. We're extremely good at coming up with theories. We're just very bad at proving any of them. But it turns out we're not the only ones who go out on a scientific limb.
We're here to discuss, or at least attempt to discuss, cars, car repair, and scientific education in America today.
These are observations made by junior high school and high school and college students. And these are actual, taken right out of the exam questions.
Okay.
Here they are. You ready for this?
I can't wait.
When you smell an odorless gas, it's probably carbon monoxide.
What? Dan Quayle?
That sounds like something Dan Quayle would say. When you smell an odorless gas, it's probably carbon monoxide. Here's another one. Blood flows down one leg and up the other. How does it get from one foot to the other foot? Isn't that good? The body consists of three parts. The brainium, the borax, and the abominable cavity. The brainium contains the brain. The borax contains the heart and lungs. And the abominable cavity contains the bowels, of which there are five. A-E-I-O-U. I think it was MIT. And here are some definitions. There was another section here on definitions. Germinate, to become a naturalized German. Planet, a body of earth surrounded by sky. And my favorite, momentum, what you give a person when they're going away.
Okay, so those answers came from students. Now we're going to show you how the pros make stuff up. You know, actually, once in a while, we don't have to make stuff up. And we can call on our real-world experience to actually help someone.
8255, hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, my name is Howard. I'm calling from Randolph, Ma.
And how you doing?
A question that's automotive and aeronautical and has a folkloric form.
Yeah, oh. Excellent. I love it already.
All right, we're ready, Howard.
How do you keep a mattress on the roof of your car from flying?
Yeah, well, I don't know how many people know it, but a lot of people have learned that putting your arm up there to hold the mattress is not going to work. I mean, how many times have you seen guys start out with one guy driving?
I mean,
another,
no rope.
No rope, just an arm.
Yeah.
Thinking that they can hold on to that mattress. Au contraire.
Well, even the ones that are tied up, you know, where you run the, we've always done is we've run the ropes with the doors open across the mattress and then tied it up as best we could.
Yeah.
And then you close the doors when you get in the car, which is preferable to tying them up with the doors closed and having to climb in the windows. But most people don't know what that mattress is doing when they're going down the highway at 70 miles an hour. The front of that thing is flipped
90
up
degrees.
Like the front of Dwayne Doberman's, you know, hat. And it doesn't take much for that thing to flip right off.
Yeah. Not only that, it's probably giving enough lift to the front of the car that you could lose control.
Well, exactly. I mean, you know, you get the speed up to stall speed?
Lift speed.
Lift speed, and you can take those wheels right off the ground.
I wouldn't be surprised.
But I take it you've had personal experience with mattressing?
I have a car top carrier that I built. It sits about 3 inches off the roof, you know, on suction cups and a
yes.
metal bracket. And I've tried, you know, putting that on the car and then roping the mattress to that.
Yeah.
But I still get lift, and what I figured out finally, what I need to do is get negative lift.
Yeah.
Negative lift.
How are you going to do that?
Well, there's got to be a way of shaping it, right?
Well,
Bernoulli's principle and all that.
If you had, someone should be making, if they don't already. Of course they don't. But I can visualize a device which you place over the front of the mattress.
Ooh,
after.
I got it.
You have tied it to the roof.
A mattress spoiler.
A mattress spoiler, exactly.
Yes, I figured that out, but what shape should it be?
What are we, aeronautical engineers? Oh, you said this was an aeronautical question.
Yeah.
You got to call aeronautical talk.
No, I think you need to make, you know what?
Did you take 201? You took 2001.
I took 201. I took 202. I took 201 again. You need, you know what a spoiler looks like on the, you see them on the back of sports cars and race cars. What if you were to take one of these things, you ready for this, and mount it to a piece of plywood?
Of course.
Okay, and then that piece of plywood,
See, I was thinking more of it, something that would clamp onto the mattress. If you could take that spoiler off the back of the car and put two big clamps on it, boom, so that it clamps onto the mattress and the front of the mattress, then all that air that you're making at 60 miles an hour is going to just go straight through the spoiler, up and over the mattress.
Do you move a lot of mattresses, Howard? I mean, what?
I have this one mattress I'm moving up to Hungadunga.
Oh, yeah. See, that's the problem.
And I'm going over the interstate.
Yeah. I think you have to start fashioning the spoiler.
Well, I'll tell you what. If I make it up successfully with a spoiler, I'll send you guys a picture.
Yeah. You remind me of a very funny story. You know what I'm thinking, don't you?
I do.
This friend of ours, he had an old car. It was one of those 80s big GM cars. And he worked late at night. One night, he's driving by a construction site. And it's late. It's 2 o'clock in the morning, and he sees a bunch of 4x8 sheets of plywood. It so happens that his brother-in-law is doing a little construction job.
And needs 20 sheets.
He could use a dozen or so sheets of 4x8 plywood. So this guy...
Half-inch sheet, the exterior grade. They just happen to fit the bill.
He says, who's going to miss them? So he stops his car, and under cover of darkness, he piles up half a dozen of these sheets of plywood on his roof, except he has nothing to tie them with. So he says, if I drive really slowly, where are they going to go? So he piles up, I don't know, half a dozen sheets of 4x8 plywood, quarter inch, half inch stuff. And he's not too far from his friend's house. He's going to drive to his friend's house, his brother-in-law, it turned out to be, and he's going to pile them up in the guy's yard. So he very carefully starts up and drives very, very slowly.
No, at this time, he has about 18 sheets, if I remember the story.
Did he?
18
really?
Sheets on the roof.
18 sheets is a foot and a half of plywood. Yeah. He says, oh, boy. Well, is going to love me.
18 sheets is 9 inches. It was just enough that he could reach up with his hand, thinking that holding these sheets is going to prevent them from going anywhere.
Anyway, he's doing really well. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. There's no traffic, except for that one car that cuts him off almost. He slams on the brake. All 18 sheets of plywood come forward and rip off the entire front of his car. The hood, the grill.
The headlights.
The whole thing. And he's sitting there at the intersection with 18 sheets of plywood on the street.
And $1,000 worth of damage.
$1,000 worth of damage. And you know what his first words were. Oh, man. It doesn't get any better.
So, Howard, tie it down carefully, but work on the spoiler. I think you may have an idea.
Okay. Thank you.
Good luck.
Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
I mean, the visual imagery is so good.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they said they came down like one sheet at a time. He said it was surreal. It was like slow motion. And as he saw the headlights and the grill getting sheared off, he just couldn't believe it. Wow. You know, we actually heard from Howard after that call, and he told us that he and his mattress had, in fact, made it all the way to Hungadunga, with only a few miles spent airborne. Anyway, here's another call in which my brother had some real-life experience to call upon, having failed the relevant physics course at least twice. 9287, hello, you're on Car Talk.
How you guys doing?
Good, good. Who's this?
So I'm Kathy Lambeth. I'm the den leader of Wolf Den 7, Pack 35 in Tualatin, Oregon.
Ooh,
wow.
So you're a den mother.
I'm a den mom.
So that's,
I have the uniform to prove it.
Is that Girl Scouts?
That is Cub Scouts.
Cub Scouts. Cub.
Little second grade boys.
Oh, boys. Yeah.
And so I just happened to be sanding the wheels of the Pinewood Derby car with my variable speed sander. And phoning a few parents for just some friendly advice.
Oh, and how to make the Pinewood Derby thing go faster?
That's the one.
Well,
and, of course, my son was involved totally in the whole process.
Well, I was involved in the Pinewood Derby thing for many years, having seen two boys through Cub Scouts.
Is this where it all got started?
This is where it all got started. Actually, my younger boy wasn't interested. The older, Louis, was interested in Cub Scouts, and he saw it through right to Boy Scouts.
Did he?
Then they threw him out with some moral charge. I don't know. But anyway,
it was a parental thing.
I was disappointed, I guess, that the parents got involved with it to the extent that they did. After all, it's designed so that the kids can learn.
Oh, get serious. Get a grip.
Right. I mean, you see this six-year-old kid with a belt sander?
What this thing is, for those people that don't know, the Cub Scouts nationwide have a Pinewood Derby where they give these kids a block of wood.
It's a little thing.
And a bunch of, a block of wood is like 6 by 2 by 2. Is that what it is?
That's right.
Okay, and they give you a couple of wheels and some little nails to attach the wheels to the block. And you can do anything you want with this thing with a piece of sandpaper and a broken piece of glass. And you can basically sand and smooth and whatever, and you can lubricate the axles, which are nails, with graphite.
Right.
And you can paint it, and you can do anything else like that, but you can't add weight to it except more than a couple of quarters worth of weight, right?
All you can add. That's my question. Boy, you're perception.
That's your question.
The car can weigh up to 5 ounces.
Oh, and the block of wood weighs 1 ounce.
The block of wood, when you get it, weighs about 3, but you got to, you know, you monkey with it. And
you sand it down.
Right, sand it down. So each car kind of takes on its own.
So you want to know where to embed the lead weights.
Should
there be any lead weights at all?
Any lead weights, it could be any weights at all.
Yeah.
Where should
you put them?
Well, and the track is about 20 feet. The first, maybe third or a little bit more, is a 45-degree drop.
Right, so they give you the head of steam.
Right, and
so
then
they launch the cars from the top.
And then it levels out?
And then it levels out. And the cars are almost always equal going into the off the drop, but you get on the straightaway, and the men are separated from the boys, literally.
Yeah. Well, you know why they're equal? Galileo figured that out.
Yeah.
Because They're falling. They're in free fall, basic, almost.
Falling bodies.
And as we know, free fall doesn't matter if you drop a ton of feathers or a ton of bricks.
We have learned through a multitude of telephone calls and research that what does matter the most is getting as close as possible to the 5 ounces. Because if your car weighs 4.9 ounces, forget it.
Sure, because it's 1/2 mv². 1/2 m.
Or something like
squared.
That.
That's just the kinetic energy.
That's how much kinetic energy it has, and that's equivalent to mv is momentum.
Yeah, so
you're
what?
You're making that up.
M, mass!
So what does momentum have to do with velocity?
Well, my question is...
equals ma!
What it means is that if you look at the equation k equals 1/2 mv², that your car has the potential to do more damage when it crashes into something if it's heavier.
Correct.
But it's not going to go any faster.
Sir, I've never understood this.
Well, you're about
I flunked 801 twice.
Professor Tisa.
From Professor Laszlo Tisa. Mr. Magalose, I'm going to do you a favor. I'm going to give you an F.
Again.
Again. And I said, Professor Tisa, thank you. God knows I've earned it.
And God bless.
But I was good in chemistry, if that matters.
Well, yeah, it didn't matter to him.
In math, I was okay in math.
So what is anyone giving you a reason why this makes a difference? Because I don't quite see it.
I've never understood it.
Well, it's basic statistical observation.
Oh, I know, yeah.
Cars that are 4.9 don't finish as high as cars that are 5.0.
Yeah, the heavier cars win. There is no question about that.
Now, in our ever-increasing quest, as concerned parents.
Concerned about winning parents.
Concerned about...
to beat the living, you know what, out of all those other naughty little second grade boys.
We're going to kick some butt here, boys.
We're kicking some pine wood butt.
That's the attitude.
Yeah.
Okay, we want to know, is it better to equally distribute the weight front and back, center it, which is what some of the flyers from Boys Life tell you,
yeah,
or put it all in the back,
jeez,
which is my vote.
Well, let's see.
First of all, this is not the first time I've thought about this.
No, you were in the damn derby.
I made many a Pinewood car.
Yeah, and what'd you do?
Lost every time. Because I refuse
to... Then what am I talking to you guys?
Well, I refuse to believe that the weight made that much of a difference.
So your recommendation would be contour versus weight?
I would go for the reduce the weight, just have four wheels, no body.
Okay, so when my son comes in dead last...
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
I explained to him...
You explained to him that it was those morons.
Well, you do want to reduce what we call the feather effect.
Ah, the feather effect.
Yeah, if your car is too light, then it will be affected adversely by... It's like dropping a feather and a golf ball.
It'll be blown all over the track.
It'll be blown all over the place. That might be the only reason for adding the weight.
Yeah.
To reduce the adverse effects of the aerodynamics.
And did Galileo refer to this, or does 801 call it the feather effect?
No, but I do.
I you had feathers on the
brain. What's this stuff? Good luck, Kathy. And look it, we want a full written report.
With photos
with of the photo finish.
Thanks, Kathy.
We're counting on it.
And God knows you're going to need a lot of luck, and I'm giving it to you right now.
And if we can think of any other way for you to cheat, we'll call you.
Amen. See ya.
The spirit of America is alive and well.
There's a woman who's taking motherhood, as she should. A big joke.
way too serious. You know, I remember that we brought Kathy back for Stump the Chumps a few weeks later, and she told us her son finished fourth in his derby, which we thought was pretty good until she told us there were only two other cars in the race. Anyway, in addition to making up scientific theories on the spot, we always try to keep our listeners up to date on interesting developments in various fields of research, like this one. We have time for a few more calls.
Wait a minute. I want to talk about this little note that John gave me here.
Oh, okay.
Which has to do with Dr. This is from Massachusetts, actually. Dr. Joseph DeFranza, who's from the University of Massachusetts Medical Center in Worcester, did a study showing that smokers have 50% more automobile accidents and receive 46% more traffic tickets than non-smokers.
Oh, I know the answer. It's obvious. This guy had to be a PhD to figure that out?
This guy, he's either a PhD or an MD.
Well, it's even worse.
Doctor.
Well, he
speculates on what the answer...
I know exactly the answer.
Go ahead. What do you think?
Well, if you were a smoker, you'd know because...
I'm not. I mean, I'm pure. I can breathe better. I can smell flowers.
I know. When I
eat more.
When I...
I'm fatter.
When I used to smoke...
And I'm dying for a cigarette.
When I used to smoke, a cause of great concern...
Last week.
...was dropping a cigarette down between your legs while you were driving.
Especially when you park next to a bus.
No,
everyone's looking out the window wondering what the hell you're doing.
No, worse than that is driving along at 60 miles an hour... And no, it's all right if you drop the whole cigarette. You got to short it to find the head. But when the end of the cigarette fall down between your legs at 60, you're done for. And you don't think that would cause you to speed. Anyway, that's the end of the show for tonight. I can't go on. So Dr. DeFranza had to figure that out. What's his reason?
Dr. DeFranza says, he says that smokers.
Okay. I got it here. 47 years ago. No, that's wrong. Dr. DeFranza says, I'm sorry for injecting such levity into an otherwise serious show.
Smokers are less concerned about their health and are more likely to be reckless drivers. That's what Dr. DeFranza
says. He's nuts. Can we take a call? There you have it, folks. Two consummate radio professionals. Now pay close attention, kids. That's how it's done. You don't think we were just born with that kind of composure, do you? Okay, because sometimes scientific inquiry is multidisciplinary, And sometimes there are multiple variables, like in this call, where we had to apply our engineering skills and our degrees in marital relations, and we combined it with my brother's usual tact.
1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, my name is Alice, and I'm calling from Hastings on Hudson, New York.
Hi, Alice.
Hastings on Hudson.
I really don't have a car problem. I have a family squabble problem that's related to cars.
Yeah.
The problem is that I'm very lucky. I have a daughter and her little family living on the other side of town from where we live.
Yeah.
And I like to go to her house. I call it the low road because there's a big hill between my house and her house. And my husband says it's so much longer to go that way, I should just go up and over the hill. Well, I've clocked the distances. The distance from my house to her house on the low road is 2 miles. And if I go up and over the hill, it's 1.5 miles.
Yeah.
You know, every time I go my way, you take it so much longer. And if I go his way, I just feel it's more of a strain on the car, and I use up more gas climbing up this hill. Well, we got the altitude on the hill. I don't know if you need all these numbers.
Yeah.
Well,
how long have you been retired, Alice?
How long? I'm not retired yet, but he is.
He is.
Okay. Yeah. I knew one of you had to be retired.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, go ahead. Give me the data.
The altitude, I live at 170 feet. My daughter is also at 170 feet high, and the hill between us is at 320.
Yeah.
And I don't know which way we use more gas, and I know which way you use more time. Because my way, I have to go through a traffic light.
Well, your way is longer, both in distance and in time, but
yeah.
it's shorter in so far as you don't have to climb an unnecessary hill.
Yeah, he says, well, you go on the other side, you go down
there
again.
There you go.
And so whatever you've spent going up, you regain going down. Is he an engineer?
Yes. Doesn't this sound like an engineer?
Of course, it's a classic engineering approach. Which is entirely wrong. Is he listening? I hope he's not listening.
Well, actually, he is.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
We're going to dump all over him.
That's okay.
Well, I'm not so sure, Alice. So.
I mean, theoretically, he is exactly, of course, right. Theoretically.
Okay.
That the energy, I mean, if this were, you know, if this were a physics problem when he went to school and he did a physics problem.
Yeah.
And the energy expended going up would be regained almost except for losses from friction.
Right. Potential
going
energy.
Down,
yeah.
A potential energy, kinetic energy, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Would be a great theory. That's assuming that you didn't mind if you were going 85 miles an hour when you hit the bottom of the hill,
right.
Which you don't. You do mind, and that's why you have to use the brakes.
Right.
It's the same as if you were walking.
Yeah.
Which way would you walk?
I would walk a long way because it's so much easier.
You ain't kidding. Ask him if he had to walk, would he walk up over the hill and down?
Well, a better question is, would you bicycle?
Oh, your bicycle, you'd go the long way.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Every time.
There is no formula for how much gas you use going up a hill.
Sure, I mean, we could calculate all of that. But
I doubt we could calculate it. Somebody could calculate it.
Your husband probably could calculate
it. He's got nothing to do. He's retired.
And that's exactly what gets him into trouble. Because he could make all those calculations, and the answer would be, so what?
See, what you can't take advantage of, as you pointed out at the beginning of the call, is you can't take advantage of the potential energy that you gain by getting to the top of the hill.
Yeah.
Because you must slow down.
You have to brake.
So yeah. That being the case, I think I would always opt for the roundabout way, especially considering the fact that you only are climbing an additional 20 feet in elevation,
uh-huh.
And it's only costing you 0.5 miles.
Oh, wow. You came in on my side.
We came in on your side completely, but we would always come in against an engineer because they're all bozos.
And we're going to open a special website just for your call, Alice. Because I know we're going to get like 50,000 emails.
Yeah. engineers who are going to tell us that it's right. better to go up and then down. And I'll say the same thing to them that I say to you.
Okay,
yes.
Well, thank
I mean,
you.
I hope your husband has some other redeeming characteristics.
Oh, he does.
And he probably does.
Yes,
and
try to
cure him of this engineeringness that he has. I mean, he's tell him he's retired now. He can forget all that stuff because most of it is nonsense.
Okay. I'll tell
buy him some golf clubs, Alice. he can plot some trajectories.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you very, very much.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
You know, it's true that my brother loved to make fun of theoretical engineers, and I'm sure the feeling was mutual. But say this for us, we didn't just make fun of them behind their backs. Oh, no, we also did it on national radio. 2:55. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Yeah, hi, I'm Robert Budney. I'm calling from Princeton.
Hi, Robert.
Princeton, New Jersey.
You bet, yes.
Not
yes,
Princeton
indeed.
University.
Yes, indeed.
Both, New Jersey and University.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Got it.
However, I should preface this to say that in a past life, I was at that same Minimum Security Institute where you guys graduated.
Oh, really? And you went from there to Princeton?
Yep.
Let's see. We're going to figure out, therefore, you must be...
A mathematician.
No.
Well, yeah, I
think
I got
a physicist.
But I'm a physicist here.
We're both right.
Yeah, but I'm doing work on controlled thermonuclear fusion.
Controlled thermonuclear fusion.
Oh, you're working with those Pons and Fleischmann guys?
Yeah, well, we're the... Yeah, we
the heirs apparent to their...
Yeah, we distance ourselves from them.
What happened to them anyway?
Whatever happened to them?
Well, one of them went in hiding, and the other keeps claiming that he's making progress, but the world doesn't believe him.
Really?
Yeah.
Because no one can ever replicate.
Exactly, because he's got the magic touch.
Maybe he does. I mean, it could well be that it's he.
Yep, yep.
Oh, yeah, he may be adding energy to the mix.
He may be.
Yes.
In which case, what we need to do is clone him.
And give everyone one of him.
Exactly, right.
Yep. Yeah, stick one of him in your gas tank.
Yeah, exactly, or under your hood.
So anyway, Robert, why did you call us?
Okay, so I have a Ford Escort, and every time I take it in to get the it tuned up, the garage tells me, oh, you haven't changed the timing belt. It's about ready to go. You know, you've got more than 80,000 miles.
And you say, I didn't know these thermonuclear engines had a timing belt.
Right. However, also I have this philosophy that if it's not broken, don't fix it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. And so I tell them that, and they say, well, you're going to be lucky if you get, you know, past our driveway without the... Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you've gotten past their driveway many a time.
Many times, yeah.
Right.
So anyway, so what I'd like to know is, do you advise preventive medicine on these things, or...
What schools did you go to again? I mean, come on. Did you learn nothing?
Well, I learned to distrust engineers.
Well, I'll tell you, we because our shop is close to MIT,
yeah.
Many of our customers are professors at MIT.
Yeah.
And they are the hardest sell, biggest pain in the butt customers because they question everything and they want to know why. And if they taught as well as they asked, I would have learned something when I was there.
Well, I didn't.
No one does.
No.
You're not supposed to learn anything.
But yeah. they are, and you're a tough sell because, and of course, you have evidence on your side that, in fact, they lied to you.
Yeah.
That the belt didn't break when they said it would.
How many miles on the Escort now?
Oh, it's 85,000.
85, and they told you to change it at 60.
Yeah, or something like that.
Something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
So you know that they're lying.
Yeah.
So then do what you want.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and the truth is that even if this belt does break, it will not harm the engine. If the belt breaks, you can just drive it.
Yeah, but
it.
You might be... Do you ever venture out onto the Jersey Turnpike?
Oh, all the time, sure.
Not in that car. I mean, I wouldn't.
Well, I try to find a big truck that's going fast, and I get in
and you hook onto it, turn off the engine.
Yeah.
No, the problem is that you really should do this, Robert,
mm-hmm.
because what's going to happen is the timing belt is going to break.
Yeah.
And when it breaks, the engine is not going to run any longer.
Yeah.
But it won't damage the engine.
But,
and
because
once you replace the belt, then you can drive it again, but you'll be inconvenienced.
You may be dead. Because it may happen when you're on the outside lane on the New Jersey Turnpike,
right.
and all of a sudden you're going from 75 miles an hour to about 3 miles an hour, and three semis go over you and don't even notice.
Uh-huh.
And then
well, the first one usually notices.
The first one notices. The second two.
But he can't stop because the other two are bearing down on him.
Right. They're all tailgating each other. Uh-huh. And they'll just wipe you out. And then we won't have any more controlled thermonuclear fusion ideas coming from you. And that would be bad.
Yeah. I mean,
so don't be such a cheapskate. They're paying you good.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?